As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
After a historic summer for women's football, the Women's Super League returned this weekend and there were a fair few shocks along the way. This weekend, it's back and it's Derby weekend. I'm Mark Chapman. Welcome to The Athletic Football Podcast.
They won the WSL back-to-back. Since then, until now, they've been absolutely drifting, and it's unacceptable.
Here she goes, Stengel, she's down again! What a turn-up this is!
Toon and Russo factor is really important. If United don't capitalise on that, they'll be absolutely daft.
There's a general perception that they have underperformed as a club.
WSL history for Aston Villa. For the first time, they take points off Manchester City in this competition.
All eyes are on both of those teams playing on Sunday.
This is what we want to see.
So with us for this pod, commentator Robin Cowan and author of Unsuitable for Females, Dr. Carrie Dunn. That felt, because of the results, Carrie, like a very good game week one, as we now call it.
Yes, wasn't it amazing? I don't think anyone would have made any money on any accumulators if they were betting on WSL matches this first weekend. Yeah, absolutely stunning first round of matches.
Does it give you even more hope for the new season, Robin?
Oh, definitely, yeah. This is what we want to see, is not the sort of procession of the top three beating everyone, and then because it used to be that the sort of head-to-heads between City, Chelsea and Arsenal would decide the title, and we're definitely seeing that sort of not become so significant anymore. Like last season we had Arsenal losing to Birmingham, who eventually got relegated, and then we've already got this on the first weekend. So I think the fact that it's just showing that it is getting more competitive, that the sort of lower mid-table teams are capable of pulling off these upsets, is just going to make it more attractive of viewing.
Is it just other teams getting stronger, or do you think in any way, either of you, there are other reasons? For example, coming off the back of an international summer, Carrie?
Yeah, I think it's been a bit of an odd run-in to the start of this season. Obviously, we had the first week postponed, so that's kind of played havoc, I imagine, with preparations. But yeah, I think, I hope the gap is closing. I know that a lot of clubs are looking to invest in players and infrastructure in the way that our kind of big three or big four have been. So hopefully that gap is closing. As Robin says, getting a more competitive domestic league, which was always the plan behind having the Women's Super League in the first place.
Just watching most of the games over the weekend, I think we can discount the Brighton game because they had a really early sending off, and that was a convincing win. And then we also had Manchester United winning convincingly against Reading. But actually, just having a glance across all the games, they were really close, really, really good. And I think actually the teams are now, because it's been professional, every single year, the technical ability, the tactical nous of these players just gets that little bit better. And I really noticed that this weekend, that even Leicester, who are everyone's tipped to go down, I thought they showed some really good flashes against Spurs, and they lost because of two long ranges. So actually, I just think year on year, season on season, all of those little bits are just getting better. And so, yeah, I think teams will get closer. And hopefully we're not going to see, apart from if you do get a sending off, these sort of huge score lines.
If you had to pick one result that stood out for you and a reason why, which would it be, Robin?
Well, I think the obvious one is perhaps the Aston Villa Manchester City one. I think we were all very intrigued as to how Manchester City were going to cope losing all three of their first choice midfielders. And the answer was not very well, particularly. And Aston Villa, I think, again, on paper, we all thought they'd recruited really well. And even though they obviously shipped three goals, they played without fear. I think in previous seasons, you have City, Chelsea and Arsenal. Teams go into them already sort of beaten. They're scared. They've got that fear factor. And actually, well, Manchester City, clearly, I think that's decreased because of the losses they've had in their squad. But Carla Ward she was like, right, no, front foot, you're going to press. You've got Rachel Daly up there just scurrying about, making things happen. So, I mean, it was a spectacular game and a spectacular result for Villa, who really struggled at the end of last season.
We'll drill down into City in just a moment because they take on Chelsea this weekend. But the same question to you, Carrie, on a result and why.
Yeah, I mean, again, I think I probably would have picked out Villa, but I guess, you know, Liverpool coming straight back into the WSL and beating reigning champions. I was in Liverpool last week for a book event and there were lots of Liverpool fans saying, how do you think we're going to do this season? I was like, no, I think you're going to be okay. And they were looking forward to the weekend. They weren't kind of approaching it with any kind of, oh, we've got Chelsea. It's a little bit nervy. They were going in and they were quite confident that the team that Matt Beard has got there would get a result. And they really did. And the way in which they did it, the way, again, as Robin said, they held their nerve right to the end. They never kind of looked like they were going to let it slip.
And they had an awful start, didn't they? I mean, that's the other thing, which can shatter a promoted side's confidence against the champions inside 2 minutes.
Yeah, and they just kept the focus, they kept working, they kept to the game plan, and it absolutely paid off.
I think that was the big point, Chappers, actually, because there was some stats, I can't remember exactly, but it was something like Chelsea have not lost after taking the lead after about 40 WSL games. It was like a huge, huge run they've been on. And that's the big thing, is that actually to have that mentality to believe, to keep going and to come back against the sort of might of Chelsea is a real, you know, feather in the cap for Liverpool.
To be honest, Robin, look, you know how it works. If you can't remember a stat exactly, just make it up. Nobody checks them, really.
Sound confident enough.
Oh, that's great. Right, let's talk about some of the weekend games then. A couple of huge derbies, Arsenal against Tottenham and Liverpool against Everton. But then there is also Chelsea against Manchester City. Let's start with that. Let's expand on the Manchester City stuff and then we'll come on to Chelsea. Can either of you, you're not in the camp there, but can you put your finger on or explain even, Carrie, what the atmosphere is around City at the moment?
It's a funny thing, isn't it? I mean, as Robin mentioned, they've lost their entire first choice midfield. And I think everyone was expecting Manchester City to lose some players this summer. They had lots of contracts running down. I don't think anyone quite expected them to lose quite so many players in such a short space of time, meaning they hadn't got the opportunity to replace them, because even last season, the squad was looking a little bit threadbare at times. They were struggling to get kind of a full bench occasionally. So I think it must be a very, very difficult atmosphere at the moment, just kind of thinking, how are they going to get through this season, looking to compete at the top without that strength in depth that they have historically had, you know, particularly in that midfield? Because let's face it, yes, okay, they've lost a few players, but there is a massive Kira Walsh-shaped hole there now. And how are you going to replace a player like that? I think that's going to be difficult for anyone to do, let alone with that short amount of notice.
But also, not necessarily rebuilding from a position of strength, Robin, in the sense that they've lost all of these players. You know, Scott, White, Barnsley retire, Stanway, Bronze, Weir, Walsh go, you know,
as far away as possible.
to some of the great European clubs. But even with all of that, they were only third last year and only just scraping into third last year. So when I talk about from a position of strength, even with all of those players, you're not rebuilding as champions.
Absolutely, yeah. And actually, I do think there's a general perception that they have underperformed as a club. They've had a lot of investment. They've only won the Super League once back in 2016. So I do think that there's a kind of question mark as to how... I'm not sure the commitment to the women's team is the right way, because I think they've spent quite a lot of money, but it's kind of the way it's being spent. And also, I mean, we've got to say it, I think the way they look at coaches, they tend to want to bring coaches through who are part of already the kind of City group, whether that's in the youth system or one of their many other clubs. And just from the comments about, particularly from Georgia Stanway when she left, she was very firm on saying she wants to play consistently in one position. Now, last season, it was kind of like she was deployed at right back because they had no one. So it was kind of like a needs must thing. But clearly there's something there that the players aren't happy with.
Carrie?
You have to say, when you see comments like that from Stanway, it sounds a little bit... It sounds a little bit Sunday League, doesn't it? Like, who's turned up? Who's right footed? Who can play right back? Oh, you know, Georgia's there. She's good. She can slot in. And you can completely understand why a player who's well on the way to being world class would not want to be doing that, would want to refine her own specialism, her own skills, and be able to play consistently in a preferred position and excel at it. So, yeah, I think there are questions to be asked. I mean, we mentioned the retirements in the losses for City. I mean, obviously, Jill Scott wasn't at City last season, and she hadn't been there the season before. I'd been out on loan. So that's not so much a loss that shouldn't have surprised them. I mean, surely there should have been some kind of succession planning, thinking we've got a couple of senior players who will be looking to step back pretty soon. What are we doing to make sure we have players in line to step up? Who are we watching to fill those gaps in the squad? And it just seems to have not happened.
Do you think then, Carrie, there's a bigger picture here or a bigger issue here, rather than simply Bayern, Barcelona a couple of times and Real Madrid coming in for their players?
I think there is, because when the City project first began, it was City who were the really attractive club for players all over the world to come to. You know, you had all kinds of top class players coming in and wanting to play for City because they were the big guns, and they've fallen well down that ranking now. I mean, yes, sure, of course, there's some novelty factor in these other clubs who are kind of coming through and the other European leagues that are becoming more competitive. But yeah, I think there are serious questions to be asked.
So whereas Chelsea, given the players they have brought in, Robin, there is much more forward planning.
Oh, much more. And they got their business done early, as they usually do. We already knew they were going to sign Perisay and Buchanan. And a complete contrast to what you mentioned, Chappers, earlier, they were strengthening from a position of strength. So that was quite ominous. I know they lost the first game. It seems to be something they usually do, actually. I think they've lost the first game out of their last five seasons now. But the depth they have, that's the kind of the work that Emma Hayes has to do, is to kind of fit all these pieces together, which she perhaps didn't quite do against Liverpool on the weekend. But yeah, no, it's the old cliche about the kind of Sir Alex Ferguson Manchester United. You don't stand still because you've won something. You've got to just keep going and know where to recruit and just keep it. And obviously they have the capacity to, because she's got the resources, and it's a very attractive club to go to because they do win basically, you know, most things domestically. So yeah, that's the big difference.
And just to back up Robin's stat there that she hadn't made up, Chelsea have won only one of their past five season openers. So there we are. Well done. And I mean, Emma Hayes said after Sunday's defeat that they couldn't hit a barn door. So if they couldn't hit a barn door, that's something that will be ironed out very, very easily, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I don't think Emma Hayes will be particularly worried, to be honest, about losing that first game. She knows that, you know, marathon, not a sprint, and all those kind of cliches, they'll be bouncing back. She'll have had words with the people who need to have had words with them. And they'll bounce back ready for this coming weekend, because they'll know that this one will be a really big one, and all eyes are on both of those teams playing on Sunday.
They are, but it feels less of a catastrophe, but that's proper exaggerating. But it would feel less of a problem, less of an issue if Chelsea were to lose this, wouldn't it? Because you'd still feel that they would come good. I know it sounds like we're being incredibly harsh on Manchester City, but there's a stability about Chelsea and a back catalogue to Chelsea's achievements that would suggest that even if they lost this, they'd still be all right.
I think it wouldn't be great. I mean, losing the first two, because, you know, even though, you know, there would be time to pull it back, there really isn't that many games in this league. You know, there's still not that many teams and that many opportunities to make it up. So it wouldn't be great. I think, gosh, if City managed to win this one, I mean, all of our analysis would be chucked out the window. I mean, it's just, yeah, that would be insane. But, you know, they do have good players, and yeah, we've seen Chelsea. It just felt they really lacked intensity, and yeah, just a little bit sloppy with the finishing. But as you say, that'll be ironed out. They've got so many attacking players. You know, I think it, before the because Harder was supposed to play as well, wasn't she, at the weekend, and she got injured, so they brought in a defensive midfielder. But before that, so it was like Harder, Kirby, Kerr, Lauren James. You know, just think how is she actually gonna. How's she going about this? I mean, and actually, is that a little bit unbalanced? I'm not sure. You know, obviously,
there comes the question then. Yeah. You know, are they going to have to accept that they can't all get in the same starting 11?
Yeah, I think it's an excellent question. I mean, and also, in addition to the players who started, you've still got Beth England. She's kind of sitting there waiting patiently for her chance. And you have to kind of think, well, a bit like we're talking about with Stanway, maybe it's time to think about next step for her? I don't know. It is a difficult thing because, yes, Emma Hayes has got to accommodate all these, you know, top-class players, all presumably on decent wages, and fit them into her system. And, yeah, perhaps that's not going to work this season. I don't know.
Let's just play a clip from the Athletic Women's Football podcast. Lindsay Hooper, who, by the way, did put a pound on Liverpool to beat Chelsea. She didn't. I mean, that still doesn't mean she's done an acca there, Carrie. So she hasn't predicted the Morse. But
a whole pound.
A whole pound.
That's real
confidence, isn't it?
That's going big.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyhow, so obviously she'll be flush with her winnings, will Lindsay. Anyhow, on the Women's Football Pod, she was joined by former City and England keeper Karen Bardsley, and they talked about how all those City exiles are getting on in Europe.
Let's also bring you up to date on Georgia Stanway and how she got on with Bayern Munich. She made her debut. She was booked, actually, after 7 minutes. I'm just going to let you laugh there in the background, Karen.
Why am I not surprised?
Why am I not surprised? The only Bayern player to get booked as a new side drew 0-0 at Eintracht Frankfurt. Well, I mean, your laughter tells us everything. Should we begin with Georgia Stanway? But also give us your thoughts on Bronze and Walsh as well, and how you think they'll fare abroad.
Well, I mean, Georgia, I mean, where do you even start with her? I mean, the amount of times I've come away with like bruises on my shins and nearly broken legs in training, like this girl loves a tackle, you know, but it says it all, you know, like she wants to win. She's a competitor, just like Lucy, just like Kira. And, you know, she just loves throwing herself about, you know, that physicality is something that you don't necessarily see a lot in the WSL. So, yeah, I think it sets her apart. But, you know, as we saw over the course of the Euros as well, like she's starting to mature into that as well. You know, so she's recognizing when she can and when she can't do it. But, you know, she's probably super keen, you know, to kind of put herself in good stead over at Bayern Munich and kind of set her stall out. And I think she probably did that. So, you know, fair play to her. But I think it's going to be really good for all of these girls to kind of go abroad and get a new experience. I think it's going to really develop them, not just as footballers, but as people, and open their eyes to how other parts of the world play football and how other people live.
I've seen some highlights already of Walsh doing what she does with those crossfield passes. You see that? She just does it with ease, doesn't she?
It's so natural for her, isn't it? It's like she does it in her sleep. You know, some of the vision that, you know, I've seen from her I just think of her as like Rochdale royalty, you know what I mean? I'll always remember her, like when she first came into City and she was like really quiet, didn't say a whole lot, but as soon as she got her frilly socks off and put her boots on, you know, she was letting her football do the talking. So she
you're
always
painting the picture there, Karen.
Well, just picture it. I mean, what was she at St. Bede's College at the time, and she'd come over from college, like just get changed, you know, just say a little hello, and then she'd go and do her thing on the pitch and absolutely just leave us all mouths agape with what she could do with a football at her feet. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to what she does, you know, surrounded by such talent over in Barcelona.
And to listen to the whole show, just search the Athletic Women's Football Podcast, and whilst you're there, hit subscribe. There's a new show out every week.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This is the Athletic Football Podcast. I'm Mark Chapman, joined by Carrie Dunn and Robin Cowan. Let's move on to the North London Derby, Saturday lunchtime. You're doing the commentary for this. Robin, how are you viewing this one?
It's going to be really exciting because it looks like it's going to break the WSL record, pushing towards 50,000, hopefully. And yeah, I did both of the North London Derbies last season. And the first one in particular at the Hive, Spurs took their first point off Arsenal, and it was a fantastic game because Tottenham have really shown a great progression. Last season, they were really hard to score against, and I think that's the thing they're focusing on this season, is trying to, you know, add a little bit more in attack, although they've lost Rachel Williams, who was great for them last season. She's gone to Manchester United. So, I mean, it's going to be an interesting one because I think they were talking about this on the Athletic Women's Football Podcast, that actually because it's being played at the Emirates, it's probably not going to be so partisan. There's going to be probably fairly 50-50 in terms of fans. So it might actually be a little bit more of a disadvantage to Arsenal as opposed to playing at Boreham Wood, where they're used to it being pretty much Arsenal fans. So, yeah, I mean, it's going to be, I hope it's going to be a good competitive game. Arsenal didn't have a great result in the Champions League yesterday, drawing 2-2 with Ajax. So that's something they're going to have to focus on next week as well in their qualifier, because they need to win that to get into the group stage. So I think Spurs might feel like there might be something for them here.
Because the history of this, Carrie, as Robin's alluded to, is very much one way.
It is. It's become slightly more competitive in the past couple of seasons, I'd say. Spurs will fancy their chances a little bit more. But even going back only a couple of seasons, Arsenal drew Spurs in the FA Women's Cup and absolutely thrashed them. I think it was 9-0 at Boreham Wood. And obviously Arsenal were professional then and Spurs weren't. They were still resolutely amateur at that point. It was before they got promoted. And it was a really interesting crowd that day, because you had a lot of casual Arsenal fans coming across, attracted by the fact it was Arsenal Spurs. And so they didn't quite understand that obviously one team was professional and the other team was not. But obviously now we've got two fully professional squads, as Robin said, playing at a fantastic stadium where it's going to be a very, very noisy crowd. Possibly more Spurs fans than you might have expected in terms of proportion one of the men's games at the Emirates between Arsenal and Spurs. Yeah, it's going to be a very, very intriguing one. And Spurs will have watched that match last night and they will be fancying their chances, I think.
What do you think Tottenham's aims are for this season, both of you?
I think they had the highest ever finish, didn't they, last season?
Yeah.
I think it's always going to be so difficult to kind of break into that top four, even top three, get Champions League. But I mean, I think that's probably the aim, knowing that if they don't reach that, it's not terrible, because everyone else is strengthening around them. You know, West Ham, Aston Villa, all the kind of teams that are sort of on their level. I think maybe an aim would be to take more points off the top three, the top four, because that's been a struggle for them generally. So, yeah, I mean, as I say, I think it, and also perhaps to just be a little bit more of an attacking threat as opposed to just a really solid defensive unit, maybe.
It's difficult in WSL because, as we said, we've got that kind of four teams at the top that have historically kind of locked out those top places, and then you've got kind of everybody else looking to push forward. So, yes, I think it's points tally altogether you have to look at, because if you finish sixth one season, you've got more points than you did when you finished fifth last season, then that's probably still progress because we have so few matches in the WSL as well. So it's difficult to assess. So I think, yes, more points than last season for Spurs, and they'll be moderately happy with that and certainly pushing towards that fourth place.
Even though that sort of top four and then Tottenham being the best of the rest, even though Manchester United came very late to the Women's Super League party, are they still? They still got a march on a team like Tottenham, did they?
Yeah, I think so, because they recruited very well, you know, very aggressively, and I think also they had one of the best young coaches in Casey Stoney. She's absolutely fantastic, and she's doing well in the States now. And then also, I think Mark Skinner, you know, I think they've got really two very good coaches there to take them on and to keep going. And I think, yeah, Man United are a weird one because obviously they got a huge amount of criticism for not having a women's team for ages. And now they've got these two absolute superstars from the Euros, you know, in Toon and Russo, who people want to go and see. It's great to see the Man United fans. They do come out and they do make a lot of noise. So it, you know, fair play to them. I think there were still a couple of question marks behind the scenes, as there are with most of these women's teams, about the sort of infrastructure and things like that. But they seem to have done it all much quicker, I'd say, than the others. This kind of slowly building, like Brighton and Spurs, it was sort of just incrementally getting a little bit more competitive.
Toon and Russo factor is really important. If United don't capitalise on that and, you know, put so much more money into their women's team now in terms of infrastructure, but also marketing, they'll be absolutely daft. And if there's one thing we know about Man United, they're very good at marketing, and they'll know that they need to be capitalising on the Toon and Russo factor, the Euros factor, get more people in, make sure that you're investing in facilities for the future, and be thinking about a long-term plan. It's not just about this season. And yeah, I think they'll be looking to the future already.
It took us slightly off course there. Back to Arsenal, Tottenham. We talked about the departures from City. We talked about the signings brought in at Chelsea. Arsenal are very much stability, aren't they? I mean, that is their message of the summer, isn't it?
Yeah, Arsenal are a funny one, because both Jonas Eidevall and previous manager Joe Montemurro have both been very keen on having quite a small, compact kind of squad. So where fans are saying, we need to bring in more signings, we need new faces, they're always like, no, we need to get rid of people who are not getting in the first team, make it less competitive, make sure that we've got the nucleus of the squad that we want to use. And again, we saw some of that last night against Ajax with the very, very young players on the bench. It's bringing the young players through to support the first team rather than having, you know, experienced squad players added to it. So, yes, stability, getting those players to sign new contracts, you know, people like Vivian Miedema staying was the big story around Arsenal this year. And, yeah, again, looking to capitalise on new superstar in Beth Mead, I guess. And just looking at how they're going to progress in the Champions League, because I think that has got to be the next step, because they have been pretty disappointing, I would say, in terms of their European campaigns in recent years. The first match, I know, of a Champions League campaign can never really tell us how they're going to do in the next leg. But I think there are, again, questions to be asked and work to be done before the second leg there.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer, if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Let's move on to the Merseyside derby, Liverpool-Everton. This is Sunday 6:45 kickoff at Anfield. If we go back to April 2020 and The Athletic, Sarah Shepherd wrote a piece, Robin, titled Liverpool FC Women Second Class Citizens. In the two and a bit years since, what has changed?
Well, obviously they've gone down. They went back to the Championship, have come back up. And I'd like to think more has changed, but I think we can't... The result against Chelsea, that doesn't really prove much in terms of what's gone on off the pitch. I think they've got a great manager in Matt Beard, who obviously is extremely experienced and knows what he's doing. It's not something I know a lot about, you know, but it's seriously disappointing in terms of where the women's team have been since they won the WSL back to back. And it's just since then until now, they've been absolutely drifting. And it's unacceptable for a club that size to let that happen, especially given they had that success. They should have really kind of capitalized on that, like Carrie was saying about, you know, Toon and Russo. You know, you need to, you know, make that an advantage, make that a selling point. You know, these, not many teams have won the Super League, and they're one of only four teams, I think. So it's just, yeah, I'm hoping behind the scenes there's more to be done. Was it right, Carrie, when Neil Redfern was there, because he left because he was so disappointed with how they were treated? I think he was buying them mattresses or something, wasn't he? I mean,
yeah.
It's just outrageous what was happening there.
It is. I mean, I guess the kind of comfort I take from the fact that they're back in the WSL is that they'll be fully pro now.
Yeah.
In 2013 and 2014, when they won the WSL previously, we still weren't fully professional in WSL. And the Championship, as we know, is still semi-pro. So making that step up and having the ambition to be back in the WSL does give me a little bit of confidence to think that, yes, they've got the backing there. Yes, there must be some kind of structure there that means they've improved from the last time that when they were suffering. Because things have changed in the top flight, and so Liverpool must have changed to get back into it.
But with a manager who won the title twice with that non-professional side. So now imagine what he can do, or what they hope he will be able to do within a professional setup.
Yeah, Matt Beard and his kind of honours list has been fantastic. Obviously, he popped in to cover Tanya Oxtoby's maternity leave at Bristol City a little while ago, and he did such a fantastic job there, just trying to get the squad together for a side that were struggling so much and they were already so far behind. He actually gave them some hope that they might be able to stay up. And yeah, to be given resources at Liverpool, to be given some money, it will be very, very interesting to see what he can achieve with that.
Also interesting to see what his tactics are, Robin, against Everton. Bearing in mind they had a low block, they sat deep against Chelsea to keep them at bay. Very, very different now against Everton side, who are probably trying to find their feet as well. So his tactics could be very different this week.
Yeah, no, it is going to be really interesting. I think I'm not sure Leanne Kiernan, who was really bright, she went off with what looked like quite a bad ankle injury. So she's going to be a big miss. But I think, yeah, because Everton, having watched the game against West Ham, it looked like those scars from last season haven't really healed yet, because that was real traumatic. You know, everyone was going, oh, they're going to get in the Champions League. And then they, you know, three managers later, they finished 10th out of 12th. It was absolute disaster for them last season. It looked like it's still going to take some time, even though they've got what looks like a very good manager who's actually been there for quite some time. He was kind of installed almost before the end of last season because they had an interim. So he's been there over the summer. You know, he's had a good amount of time, but it just looked like they were really toothless against West Ham. So this is a really interesting one, because I think possibly pre-last weekend, Everton would have been sort of slight favourites, having been the more established WSL side. But because of Liverpool's result, it's going to be all up for grabs. It's going to be a really, really good contest, I think.
Carrie?
I think Everton will be looking, much like Arsenal, I guess, for more stability this season. Mm. With, as Robin mentioned, the managerial changes, some of those quite unfortunate results that they will still be kind of living bright in their memories. Yeah, I think stability is what they'll be looking for this season. And I think the fact that they're playing Liverpool so early on will actually be quite good for them. I think they'll be going out kind of looking to kind of establish themselves, saying, look, we're not the same team as we were last season. This is a new era. We're going to be kind of consistent. We're not going to let those slip-ups happen anymore. Let's start here against the rivals. So, yeah, it will be very fascinating to watch.
Would you expect that crowd to be fairly balanced as well?
No.
Right. No, but bearing in mind what you said about the Emirates and Arsenal, Tottenham. And I just wondered whether that might feel more balanced for this one.
It might be more balanced than in the men's game, but I don't think it'll be evenly balanced because it's still going to be a smaller ground. So I still think your home fans are going to be slightly more rowdy and partisan. But yes, again, still more balanced than you might expect from a men's derby.
Robin?
I'm not sure. I think it might be quite even. I guess it just depends. Although, I know it's obviously been moved for telly. Not a great kickoff time for sort of families. I think that's been flagged quite a few times. The sort of 6:45 on a Sunday, and that is the USP of women's football. It's great to have something to take your kids to, as I now very much know. So that you need to
absolutely
need to occupy them constantly. Yeah. And 6:45 is just not on, no. Is it really?
What would be? This is not just a women's football. I find it in men's football as well. I always think kickoff times and the day make a massive difference to atmosphere and performance. Yep. And I know, so take the example of Brentford Arsenal in the men's last year, and I know the teams are slightly different now, but last year, opening game of the whole season, Friday night, 8 o'clock, under light. It was absolutely rocking. And I know circumstances were different this weekend as well, obviously. This year, Sunday lunchtime at midday, and it felt a bit like a picnic, really. So so trying to find ideal kickoffs for TV audiences, the crowd and the demographic that you're trying to attract, but also to get the right atmosphere is not easy, and I don't think there's going to be an answer for it, really. I mean, even the North London derby at 1:30 on Saturday, it's not a, lunchtime games can have a very different atmosphere to a 4 o'clock game or an 8 o'clock game.
Yeah, I think so. Even though it is an issue for both the men's and the women's, I do think it's important to separate, because actually the women's game is aimed at a different audience than the men's. It's much more affordable. It is for families. Like, I take my son to a women's game at a non-league ground because he's two and he doesn't want to sit down, so he'll be running around. So it's just different, and they have face painting and stuff like that. It's different, and I think that's a good thing. So actually, I think in terms of like the target audience, 1:30 on a Saturday isn't too bad because you can get home at a reasonable time. But I mean, I think in terms of general, It's not good that it keeps being moved, because we've got the issues of actually getting home. We were talking beforehand about, Carrie's train woes and things like that.
Yeah. That'll be a podcast extra, that conversation.
No, but I think Robin's right, though. It's the constant conundrum of women's football, and it has been since the WSL started, because obviously when it first started, it was a summer league, and the idea was that there wouldn't be any men's football for it to overlap with. So now we're running on the winter league, because that's what all the cup competitions also run on. We have the problem of where are we going to play, because the men's teams are still playing, and there's so many grounds being shared, so you've got to kind of fit in to the fixture list. And you've got to think, are we overlapping with the equivalent men's team? Is there a massive journey for the men's team's fans to travel from one match to the other? Can they get to both? So we have kind of additional challenges in the women's game, and it is so difficult. And I am not sure there is an ideal solution at the moment, unless we start building many more easily accessible grounds for the Women's Super League matches to be held in. But I don't think that's going to happen anytime soon.
We will leave it there. Somebody in the Athletic editorial team will have listened to this, and there will be a long read coming up about train journeys for fans and journalists at a weekend.
Robin, 12,000 words on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Robin, Carrie, thank you. See you both soon. That's it for today. A reminder, you can read the best insight on the WSL on The Athletic, including Michael Cox's analysis of Chelsea's loss to Liverpool, Paul Ballas on Kira Walsh's arrival at Barcelona, and also Flo Lloyd-Hughes on Rachel Daly transforming Aston Villa. Make sure you subscribe to this feed. For now, though, goodbye.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.